Do you invest in ETFs? Whether you're thinking, what in the world is an ETF? Or you're looking for the next opportunity to add to your portfolio. GlobalX has you covered. From big tech to bonds and bars of gold, GlobalX offers a wide range of exchange-traded funds. Go beyond ordinary with GlobalX ETFs. Visit globalxetfs.com.au. That's globalxetfs.com.au.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10. And to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
Luke Larity, welcome back, mate.
I want to ask, good to be here, my friend.
It's always good to be here chatting with you in the studio. I don't think we've done one in the studio before.
Yeah, we've done a few.
Have we?
Oh, no, not in the studio, but yeah, I think maybe
one of us has been in the studio.
One of us has been here, but yeah, it's, you know, we're international men of mystery, mate. It's hard to catch us.
Yes, it is indeed. Actually, that brings me to my first set of questions.
Austin Powers?
The best coffee in Melbourne.
Best coffee in Melbourne is, well, look, I actually find it hard in Melbourne these days. One of the places I used to go to when I was here, really regularly, have closed. I'm currently going to 100 Flinders Lane.
Oh.
Which is the new little wine bar, coffee shop, make good sandwiches.
Bit of a cheeky wine work.
It's close to the office. And yeah, you know, they tend to let me order a wine before 9 o'clock. So,
All jokes aside, it is a really nice spot.
Yeah, look, it is good and make good sandwiches if you're in there for a $16 sandwich. And yeah, it's above your sort of, you know, budget for lunch or ask when you're, you know, saving your money. I'm happily rack up the credit card there.
Okay, number two, best restaurant in Sydney. I know you're a man of, you know, travel. You do a fair bit for work.
Yeah, I'm not a Sydney aficionado, but it's a bit of an old institution, and I go there with my. Like, I went there with my friend recently. Is it Hugh Bears in the city?
Okay. Yep.
And you know, drank a lot of wine and stayed there until late.
Okay.
Hugh Bears. I had a good time last time I was there, so I'll give that a plug.
Okay. Last one, which is the one that's probably easiest for you. Best beach for surfing in Perth or around Perth?
There's no good beaches in Perth for surfing, but no. An hour and a half of Perth, I would say some of the, and they'll remain unnamed, but some of the waves around Launceston up north, an hour and a half north of Perth, there's some good waves up there.
Okay.
If you're not scared of big grey fish with white bellies.
Well, that's put me off, but that's fine, mate. And it sounds good. So for those of you that don't know, Luke, native of Perth, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, and now reside here in Torquay, Melbourne, outside Melbourne, which is a wonderful part on the coast. So we're going to talk about two companies. We're going to talk about ResMed and Cochlear today and just the general healthcare kind of industry here in Australia. I guess for those people who don't know who you are, you've been on the show quite a few times. You're on Self-Wealth Live with me.
Forgot about that.
That actually happened. And you've been on Equity Mates a lot recently.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about your business. What do you do? Who do you serve?
Cool. So our business is called Seneca Financial Solutions. Mm-hmm. We kind of have an investment-focused financial planning and high net worth wealth advisory business.
Mm-hmm.
My client base, people that work with me, tend to be business owners or ex-business owners. Not exclusively. I do retirees. I do, you know, ambitious professionals, as I rip out my headphones, gesticulating too much. But that's who we sort of service. I've been in the advice business, I suppose, now for, you know, 10 plus years. Getting old, our business has been growing. I suppose really through word of mouth, and a little bit of media stuff that we do, as you mentioned, but mainly just sort of, you know, friends of clients, referral partners through, like, you know, lawyers and accountants and stuff who refer me their clients that might need some help. But yeah, we sort of have an entrepreneurial focus, entrepreneurial background. So we tend to connect with those sort of other business owners out there, mm-hmm. Who might be, you know, are selling their business, coming to a bit of money from it as a result of that, transitioning, you know, family businesses through generations, you know, looking to merge or do a transaction, and kind of how that flows on to their personal wealth thereafter.
Mm, that's great. We have a lot of people that are business owners that listen to this or in and around businesses, whether they own businesses, invest in commercial property, these types of things.
Even those professionals who kind of think of their career as a business, like that's kind of, if I was a professional still, you know, working in industry or, you know, a tradesperson, you know, I sort of think of those people as business owners as well. If they think sort of entrepreneurially about what they do, they're ambitious, they're trying to grow, they're trying to do the best they can. I sort of, you know, think of that as well. Mm. It's not necessarily the majority of my client base, but certainly they're there for sure.
Yeah. And so you have a few different offerings. One of those things is, which we can plug today, which is people can just book in with you and have a chat, like a bit of a portfolio review type thing.
Sure.
I know you've recently been doing that with the Equity Mates community too, if people have, you know, anything they want to talk about or companies or
portfolio management. Yeah, man, like we can do, I mean, I'm happy to sit down with anyone really, particularly if they're, you know, in the RAS community and listen to you regularly, you know, give them some general advice, review their portfolio, kind of demonstrate, I suppose, the value add that we can do over time. I don't really see a lot of, as much as I know that clients do, you know, reviewing a portfolio one time, getting a one-time piece of advice, it doesn't really help that much. What helps you and what generates sort of outperformance over time and better returns, in my experience, is a consistent, disciplined investment process applied regularly, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really the RIP, I find, that drives, you know, good outcomes for our clients, not just one piece of IP for the current moment in time, if that makes sense. So happy to do that as a start point. And, you know, like I said, I'm trying to grow my business. So that's what I'm here to do.
Yeah, cool. And I know people from the RAS community have followed you up and invested with you before.
Yeah, we've got a few RAS clients actually from doing the various podcasts before. It's been great for us. So yeah, really, really enjoy working for them. And I think that, you know, unanimously say that they've had a pretty good experience. So
cool. It's good to know. Okay. So we're going to talk healthcare. I guess the first question is a really simple one. If we just think about, a lot of people think about healthcare as a thematic, you know, an aging population, more spending through hospitals, you go to the doctor, there's less and less bulk billing these days. This is going up and up and up. I think of this as like the rising cost of an older society, mm-hmm. you know, medical equipment and stuff going up. Do you invest in a thematic way? Like, do you think about your portfolios that you run as, I don't know, like, I'm going to invest in the healthcare thematic because it seems like a good broad thing to get exposure to? Or do you think otherwise?
You know the answer to this, but...
go for it.
No. Is a really short answer. I think that having a really good understanding of what drives earnings will help you forecast with greater certainty and with higher probability of positive outcome share prices. Mm-hmm. But if you can't, and if you're forecasting earnings and share prices follow earnings, those tailwinds make your margin of error and margin of safety a little bit better. But certainly I don't think about investing in a sector. You know, we might look at something like the Medicare data that comes out every month and think about, okay, well, what's a reasonable rate of growth we could expect for CSL or Integral Diagnostics or Sonic Healthcare or whatever. We might look at how much CPAP machines are getting adoption globally and the size of the addressable market. We might look at, you know, cochlear implants and how that market's growing steady and whether, you know, it's reasonable to think that cochlear are going to win any more market share in that. They're all relevant to the thematic, I suppose, but it's not the basis of which we invest. It's a data point for us to help us better forecast earnings.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, for what it's worth, it does those are wonderful ways, because some people, particularly when they're newer to investing, they don't understand how you would make a forecast. But when you have those types of data points, you can kind of piece it together over time. I've got another question, which is kind of a sub question to that one, which was, as you've been doing this for a long time, or even though you don't kind of target healthcare as a thematic, so to speak, do you see some parts of the industry are more appealing than others, like global healthcare, Aussie, software versus hardware? Over time at Seneca, have you made more money in any particular way?
I think we've made money out of healthcare a number of ways. We've also had, you know, a handful of things not go our way, as is the nature of investing, I suppose. But if I sort of think back around what's worked for us, I think it's understanding, like you said, finding those structurally supported segments of the market. And that's not necessarily with, you know, it's not aging population that I'm trying to say when I say structurally supported. It might be like the way insurance is working in the medical sector now.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a way that, you know, the government is pushing people to do something, or incentivizing something. At the end of the day, that's really, you kind of get into the root of how we do things at Seneca. We love to think about incentives. And I suppose in healthcare, the government, the regulators, the insurance people, the operators themselves all have kind of incentives to do and not do certain things. And we kind of want to try and figure that out early. And, you know, that allows us to easily forecast where earnings may go based on how people are going to behave. So that's sort of, in short, you know, what's worked for us in terms of stocks and global, local, blah, blah, blah. I think quality is probably the theme in healthcare that has worked for us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll put a caveat on that and say that it's been in an environment where quality and growth have done well historically, if you look at the most recent sort of, you know, 10, 15 year kind of period.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's necessarily we're just going to get a free re-rate on quality going forward, to higher and higher multiples from here. But certainly, businesses that are able to, just like any sector, grow market share, maintain or expand margins in a growing addressable market, generally do pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the lead up to today, just chat off air before, you mentioned that you sold a business, which is Sonic Healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few names here in Australia. Two of them we're going to cover, obviously, which is Cochlear and ResMed. You mentioned CSL before.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other names that people should probably just have on their watch list, even if they don't buy them, companies that you think have popped up time and time again?
I think in large caps, I mean, we're going to talk about ResMed, but, you know, hint, hint, I think that's a pretty good stock to buy and to own at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Based on valuation sort of grounds. Outside of that, like CSL is probably, you know, the only other sort of large cap in the ASX 200 portfolio that we run, mm-hmm. that you would say is a pure play, you know, healthcare sort of situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the smaller end of the market, in the small cap fund, we don't have a lot of pure play healthcare. We've got some life sciences stuff, some insurance stuff, but nothing that's really pure play small cap healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen, I saw an interesting company today that's, you know, coming to market shortly, and there's probably 5 or 6 companies that are in the small cap fund universe that we're sort of like considering at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just a question of price, and I think that's the, you know, you've got to have a positive expected return for these things to be able to buy them, regardless of whether you think it's a great business or not.
Do you, in terms of, I think it's going to come up quite a bit, is this idea of valuation.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the way you go about that,
mm-hmm.
is a lot of your work to do with the IRR method, which you just mentioned, so like internal rate of returns,
mm-hmm.
Which we've spoken previously about time spent in commodities and mining and that sort of stuff. But is that primarily a method that you use, or do you use things like discounted cash flow analysis? Is there other ways you think about it?
DCF's useful, but less useful, I think, in a lot of these sectors. I think if you're talking about large cap healthcare, I kind of think of it like most other sort of industrial sectors. It's just like next best alternative. You know, can I buy, is this business a lot better than the peer or the peers that I can buy? Is it trading at a premium, a discount to those peers relative to how it normally trades? And do I see a reason or do I have a catalyst to justify buying this business that something is going to change here? So we're always looking to think about when it comes to large cap, what does everyone else know in the market? You know, what's in the analyst reports? What are the brokers saying? What do we know? Is there anything different?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the best way for us to exploit that difference? So, you know, we want to only invest in companies where we think we've got an edge, where we know something that maybe not only we know, but few people believe that isn't in the price. And I think in those scenarios, that's when, you know, you've got the best chance of making a quid.
Let's move to the two companies. So we've got Cochlear and ResMed. I like to take them in that order if we can, because I know you've written about ResMed a lot for us, but also just around the traps generally. And we can refer people back to the RASC website. You can get in contact with Luke, of course, as well. But Cochlear is a business that has crept up on many people's radars probably a dozen times if you've been following the ASX for long
enough. Gone up a lot.
Yeah, and it's one of the best performing businesses in the country. Been around for a long time. People are familiar with, you know, the kind of little devices that sit on the back of people's skulls, help people hear. Can you tell us a little bit more about the business?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, they help deaf people hear, essentially, which is pretty rad if you kind of, you know.
Listen to this podcast, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, I think it's arguably, like you said, one of the great Australian entrepreneurial success stories. It has 60% market share of that hearing implant market. So, it is the dominant player. It's got a, its main competitor is this company called Sonova. They're listed in Switzerland. I think the code's S-O-O-N. And, you know, Cochlear is a business that is now, in my view, just priced for perfection. I'm not saying anything negative about the quality of the company. I mean, the narrative in the market's pretty straightforward. Dominant market position, you know, large moat. Implants are growing 10 to 15% per annum. And management of chef's kiss, you know? So, it's worth paying almost any price for this company. Well, I just don't agree. Not because I don't agree with any of those sentiments or that particular narrative. I just think everything has a price. You know, if you start to get down to the nitty gritty and the results of this business, I think that, you know, you can start to see maybe why I sort of think that way, I suppose.
How so?
So, like going through, say, like the most recent result, you can sort of see that the level of sales that the business is currently achieving aren't really sustainable. I mean, they did 17% margins on 20% revenue growth on sort of 14% unit sales growth. The industry is not growing that fast, and they're the dominant player, so they can't just continually win every, you know, every ticket that's out there. So we think that maybe like a 6 or 7% CAGR from here is probably more. In unit sales is more realistic. I think also you can't continue to grow at this scale ahead of those kind of rates of growth, and margins can't really go much higher. So for a company that's on 45 times earnings versus its long run, let me check my numbers here. It's on 53 times earnings versus 32 times average earnings over the last 5 years. Its peers on 26 times earnings versus median 21, same period. Consensus price target for this thing's 287. It's trading at 345. So you kind of start, like, you know, I'm not the only one who thinks this thing's a bit overvalued. And I just think there's, you know, the buyback they sort of suspended, which is kind of the other thing from the most recent result. Like, take that as instruction, right? Management are saying that our stock's not good value to buy back right now. So they've got the cash for it, just not doing it. So, you know, I think that's instructive. And then there's this Moderna phase 3 trial vaccine, which, you know, also has potential to disrupt Cochlear a little bit, maybe a lot, some people think. Look, I'm no expert. It's not, that's not my wheelhouse. I'm not going to pretend like I know the likely or unlikelihood of that. All I will say is that any uncertainty or increase in uncertainty around a stock at a very high valuation does leave it susceptible. And the, you know, ResMed, which we're going to talk about, we can almost use as a case study.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get to that in a minute because I think that's a great, that actually is a great segue where something's, you know, being tested and being used and the kind of impact that it has on a highly valued or highly priced, I should say, healthcare company, which we saw in 2023. For those of you that don't know, we'll get to that in a minute. One of the things that I've always liked about Cochlear is the fact that the business is like a hardware leader and has shifted into software similar to ResMed in that way. But one thing that I've always, it's kind of always concerned me is how dependent Cochlear is on, it's both a blessing and a curse because it's kind of dependent on audiologists working with surgeons to recommend Cochlear and being able to use it. And obviously they want to use it because it's been in the market for so long. But it also then creates like funding challenges because these things are very, very expensive for anyone that's got one or knows someone that has. They're extremely expensive. And that type of, I guess, down the line looking at like insurers in the US, that kind of spooks me a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough. I think it's been a, I don't think anyone in the market is worried about that at the moment. But certainly when you start to pay 50 times earnings for something, you want to be not just comfortable with the sustainability of those earnings. You want to be red hot on it. You know
what I mean? Like, yeah, for sure. They did a I'm pretty sure they did a cap raising in COVID.
They did.
And obviously then later on that probably turned out they didn't need to, but they, I remember they were being very conservative at the time.
It's like the most conservative company. Oh, it's like right up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything that's probably more conservative off the top of my head.
I can think of people who are more conservative, like management teams, but not necessarily as an organization. I think they're super conservative and a board.
Yeah, right. Do you know, can you name them?
You know, engineers at Woodside aren't exactly risk takers.
Okay.
You know, they might like doing drilling wildcat holes out in the middle of the ocean somewhere, but it's all pretty pretty safe and pretty above board. So, and you know, certain as those things can be.
Yeah.
But look, I always give Woodside engineers a hard time. So I'm sorry to all the Woodside engineers out there.
Could you see yourself owning Cochlear at a price?
Yeah, for sure. I think like all else being equal, if I could buy this on 30 times earnings or less.
So still a premium, but not a huge premium to the-
Yeah, like an average multiple, I'm happy to punt that that trial.
Yeah.
You know, given the business got pretty good momentum, you know, I know I'm going to get 5 to 10% growth out of this thing. I know the margins are going to be there or thereabouts. And it's probably got some cost out potential as well. So, yeah, look, I feel pretty comfortable with it, but just not at these prices.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Because it is like if you go through and you run through a business quality checklist, it would tick basically every single box except then you get to the last thing, which is valuation. So no knock on the quality, but more so just on the valuation per se.
You know, like I use the analogy, not about Cochlear, but with a client the other day, he's telling me about a stock and, you know, ranting and raving about how great it was. And I sort of said, oh, well, okay, here's an example. Houses in Toorak are great. A mansion in Toorak is fantastic. Is it worth $1 billion?
Probably not.
No. Well, same thing, you know, some companies are great companies, but they're not always worth the price that they're trading at. So I just think, yeah, it's a, the market can get ahead of itself. Momentum is a real and serious thing. And I think, you know, at the moment we're seeing in the markets, I think retail coming back to the markets for the first time in a little while after a bit of a hiatus, I'd say, for the last 12 months.
When you say retail, you mean like retail investors?
Yeah, retail investors and you know, self-directed investors. And I would argue that a lot of it's chasing the stocks that have done well recently. And we're starting to see this sort of blow off top in a lot of these have done well recently momentum names. Yeah. And that's throwing up opportunities elsewhere. That maybe you're a bit unloved.
Imagine $1 billion mansion in Toorak. I'm stuck on that for a second.
It's slightly smaller than your place that you've got, Rasky. It's only slightly smaller than your place.
Yeah, imagine that.
It's a little bit less money than you spent on your joint.
If anyone that's not from Victoria, if you maybe you could just do Google Street View.
Peppermint Grove,
St. George's
Double
Way.
Bay, like, you know, pick a location.
Yeah, it's a special place. I wonder when we're going to have the first $1 billion mansion in Australia.
probably not that far away, probably in our lifetime.
I hope not, Owen. I hope not.
Anyway, we digress. So ResMed is a business that, do you own right now?
Yeah, we own it. Yep. We own it. We like it.
For people that don't know it, can you tell us what it does?
Yeah. They treat sleep apnea. So they make those CPAP machines and the masks, and they have some software as well for like out-of-hospital data for clinicians.
Okay. So if I'm suffering from sleep apnea, my GP might send me to a sleep clinic or something like that.
Correct. Get prescribed or, yep, you know, recommended to get a machine, and they help you open up your airway and breathe during the night and not stop, yep, breathing in intermittent, the way sleep apnea works.
Yep. And so you would put this machine on beside your bed, and then this consumables element to it, right? Like, it's not just the hardware, you buy it once and go away forever. There's a,
yeah,
bit
the masks. Yeah, so devices are kind of lower margin, the masks are higher margin, and obviously the software as a service they have as well, which is kind of a growing part of their business, is also useful, and I think is starting to build a bit of momentum. Mm-hmm. They're not the only ones who do it. There's Philips, who also do a similar thing, and Fisher & Paykel Healthcare, which is also listed, mm-hmm, on the ASX and NZ and New Zealand. So, ResMed's essentially been, in quote marks, disrupted by Ozempic, mm-hmm, and we've seen, you know, the company multiple fall from sort of over 30 times to kind of under 20 times now,
yeah,
on an EV to EBITDA basis. So, you know, the business has significantly derated. We've sort of seen that as an opportunity to get set in this business. And, you know, whilst I acknowledge the threat and potential benefits of Ozempic and GLP-1s, certainly I think the addressable market here, growth in the market, the complementary nature, blah, blah, blah. There's a bunch of things we can talk about. Make ResMed pretty good value at the current prices.
So this is one of the businesses like Cochlear that's been on the ASX for quite a while and has an absolutely amazing track record.
Yeah, made people a lot of money.
Yeah, compounding, top line, it's got great margins, like wonderful cash flow. It's just a beast of a company.
Yeah, peach.
And then 2023 hits, or late 2022, 2023, there are these things like Ozempic with people starting to talk about it. 2023, people start to get really worried. Stock falls.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do then? But what did you do to determine that it could be something that you should look at? Like, what did you go back to the trials? Did you?
Yeah. So we just read, I suppose, the bear thesis. Tell me all the bad news is probably always a good place to start. So we just read the bear thesis and then sort of verified that against where we thought the addressable, like the size of the addressable market and the penetration that, you know, ResMed had. And I suppose it's a little bit of a unique situation in the sense that, you know, ResMed's major competitor in Philips had a product recall,
yeah,
and kind of all consumer and clinician faith in those particular masks and products is pretty much out the window. So ResMed have had a free run at the market, essentially. Mm. And I suppose being able to sort of start to take advantage of that.
Yeah. At the same time then, or just after that, then Ozempic hits. And for folks that don't know, Ozempic is one of the brand names for drugs that help people lose weight.
Yeah, GLP-1s. Essentially what they do is they stop you from having cravings to eat. And you know, it's a huge market. You would have, if you go look at like the Novo Nordisk share price, and Eli Lilly are now doing a trial for another GLP-1, which is, you know, similar wheelhouse. But they're talking about, you know, the multiple sort of applications of these particular, or the ability to control cravings and to suppress the way that we feel about stuff. So you can kind of start to think, yeah, this could be huge, you know, and a huge disruptor to a lot of the healthcare complex. And look, I actually don't disagree that that's probable. I think, you know, GLP-1s are going to be a game-changing sort of Uber-level disruption. But there's also the time in the middle, and there's also, you know, the size of the market we're talking about here and relative to the size of ResMed as a business. So,
because ResMed's management have seemed to suggest numerous times now, and they seem to, from the transcript I read last reporting period, they basically said, they were basically going at pains to say, let's talk about something other than, you know,
Ozempic. Yeah, they've gone a bit on the, they've gone a bit more on the offensive at the latest result. So like they start, they're citing a the thing that all the analysts are writing about, and the thing the management talked about is this study that, that's been conducted, and it's that people are 10% more likely to use a CPAP machine when they're on a GLP-1. So it's not sort of necessarily either or, but it's both.
Yeah, and that's what management have been saying.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the study's there. They've done the, it's not, they're not lying. So, you know, I'm a little bit comforted by that, but I'm more comforted by the fact that there's a billion people in their addressable market, and there's 23.5 million ResMed devices out there. Yeah. So it's a very, very big market. It's growing as well. Now, not saying that growth rate, you don't need to be conservative. Maybe that there's less obese people out there, less instances of sleep apnea as a result. But, you know, they did 13% EPS growth, 5 to 7% consensus upgrades across kind of the analysts in the market at the last result. Margins are up 90 basis points, really good cost control. And the Philips thing's kind of still, I mean, they just had this thing with the DOJ or whatever. We don't have to go into detail, but essentially they're still a bit stuffed, for lack of a better word. So, you know, Cochlear had a product recall.
Yeah.
I think it took them 8 years to get back to where they were before. And I mean, the market's been pricing the Philips recall, I think, like they're going to get back to earnings within 2 years. And I read one report and it said like, oh yeah, we think that by end of 2024, Philips is back in the market. So, well, is that really likely? And, you know, in our view, probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like healthcare takes a long time.
Bro, no one takes risks with this stuff, right? And you don't buy two CPAP machines.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just, you just buy them once. Like, it's like the Cochlear thing, it's expensive.
Yeah, pay the extra $100 or however much it is.
Whatever it is, you don't care.
Yeah.
Right? The guy, you know, who looks after you has recommended the ResMed one because the other one had a recall. Well, you don't be like, oh, no, I'd rather buy the Philips one. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't happen.
Yeah. And in terms of, so this is like, this was an opportunity, and I looked at the share price chart. I don't have it in front of me here, but this was an opportunity to effectively buy the business at a price. Like, I remember talking to members about this. It was an effectively a chance to average into one of the ASX's best businesses. And you mentioned Cochlear with the recall. I think that was like early 2010s or first half of 2010s, I think. You don't get opportunities like this or like that very often at all.
No, and I mean, do I think this is going to be on 30 times earnings anytime soon? No. Or 30 times EV? No, I don't.
So not back to the kind of exorbitance.
I don't think anyone reasonable would make that argument. I mean, you might be able to, but I doubt it. What I would say, though, is that buying it on 15 or 17 times EV to EBITDA is too cheap. Now, where you want to sell that stock, what you think the right number is for it, you know, if you want my right number, come and pay me and I'll help you. but the reality is that, yeah, you know, there is a number there, and I think there's plenty of money to be made between here and there for sure. And you know, if you had to, if I was buying, if you did to me, oh, look, you can buy ResMed with the GLP-1s out there in the ether, doing the kind of numbers it's just done and what it's been able to do historically in the sector where it is with the tailwinds it's got, 20 times EV to EBITDA. I mean, there's a lot of shit businesses trading on 20 times EV to EBITDA.
Yeah, yeah, true. There is.
And yeah, like, it's not a stretch.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it ticks all the boxes for being quality, similar to Cochlear, except this one you're buying and a valuation that's much more compelling, historically speaking, and in the context of what also is available on the market. Quick question on that. So when you think about your valuations and these types of things, particularly like a business such as ResMed, are you thinking, you know, what does a peer group look like? What does the average look like for the ASX, that type of thing?
I think when you've got established businesses that have consistently like re-rated higher, you just need to ask yourself, what other businesses can I buy on similar multiples? Does this business look any better or any worse than those? So, you know, I don't need to do a lot of bottom-up work on ResMed. We've kind of got our base case models there. You know, I've just got to check a couple of things, and I kind of know what I can get for a mid-teens EV to EBITDA multiple. And I know that's a good buy. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's a bit of maybe learned knowledge there. If you're a first-time investor or you've been investing for 12 or 24 months, you're not going to have that. Just
the pattern recognition.
Yeah, that you can just click your fingers and know stuff. But in the same way that sometimes you read company announcements or you go through a deck and you're just like, oh, this sounds sus as. You know, yeah. I don't really know why necessarily or whatever, but you can go, you're like, you go back to it and you're like, oh, yeah, that and that and that. And, you know, It's just kind of like knowing what you know. You know, if you watch sport, you'll know you can see a pattern in the game and, the momentum's turning. Not really sure. Couldn't put my finger on a specific thing, but I can just tell you that, you know, that they're going to make a comeback or, you know, the momentum of the game's changed. Same sort of thing.
Yeah. When you – so final question on ResMed, then I might just ask you for some other ideas or something else that's on your mind. When you think about a business like ResMed or something like this, like, and just across your portfolios, typically how long do you own a large cap business for? Like how long – what is typical for you?
As long as it takes to kind of realize the value that we think is there to start with. I mean, all the thesis breaks and we're wrong. So, you know, some of the stuff we've owned since inception in the Aussie large, and I can't really see a scenario where we would sell it out.
When was inception?
3.5 years ago. I think we're up 4 years on the 17th of June.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, does that mean we've never sold shares in ARB? No, we have. Have we never bought shares? Yeah, we've bought and sold lots. But the point is that it's not, there's always a core position there. There's always a holding of some description because we think it's a good business that can steadily compound and generate above market returns consistently. So we own it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Like it. But
some stuff's there for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Is a short answer. Mm. And other stuff's been there for 3 years.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a question about other businesses that might be on your watch list. But people, as we mentioned at the top of the show, something that Luke and I wanted to experiment with is a lot of times with the podcast, we get guests on and not a lot of people always feel like they should follow up in these types of things. But Luke's happy to be the guinea pig for this session. And if you want to-
may regret this, but yeah, go on.
If you want to follow up with Luke, if you want him to do like a portfolio review, if you want to have a chat with him about companies, there will be a link in the podcast player and you can take him up on that. It goes to a booking link. So feel free to blow up that link for him and just get in contact with him. And hear what he has to say about different businesses or just
I want to hear
what
you guys have got to say too. Like it's not, you know, not a one-way street.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that I was going to talk to you about, the question I was going to ask you is about one of the more exciting ideas that you have in your portfolio right now.
Yeah.
But-
You want a large one or a small one?
One of each.
I knew you were going to say that.
But before we get to that, anyone listening to this, Luke will be back regularly on the show. So you can write into us and request companies that you want us to take a look at. We obviously are going to screen companies pretty heavily. Like if you're talking about a micro cap that has no revenue, it's not really in the interest of anyone.
Unless I'm a major shareholder and I want to ramp it up.
But all jokes aside, we want to talk about quality businesses on the show. Like, doesn't have to be a blue chip like ResMed or Cochlear, but we do want to talk about good businesses with good prospects for the long term. So send them in. Let us know. There's a link in your podcast player. It says ask a question. It's like the Australian Investors Podcast.
The goal is to try to make, I think, to help people make better investment decisions, you know, at the end of the day, rather than just like talking about hot stocks. You know, I think I'm trying to look at my list here thinking like, well, what can I pick from here that's not just, I think it's going to go up a lot, but also like instructive in maybe like some concepts that you can kind of take away.
Okay. Give us one.
Okay. So let's do Mermaid Marine. Well, it's not called I should use a proper name. It's now called MMA Offshore. Mm-hmm. It used to be called back in the day, Mermaid Marine. It's in our small cap fund. Mm-hmm. The code for it is MRM. Do you know this business?
Oh, years ago. I remember when
it's been around for a while. Yeah, like a bit of an old one. It's really, it's pretty simple. It's a tugboat business, right? Yeah, so I know that kind of probably doesn't inspire anybody to greatness, but it is actually quite interesting. So essentially, you know, if you've got an oil and gas platform and you need to drag it around the ocean, that's what they do, or you want to drag stuff in the air in the ocean, you use a company like Mermaid Marine. It's a very cyclical business, and if anyone goes back and has a look at the share price chart, you'll see it fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a terrible, terrible, terrible investment for a long time. But oil and gas and mining, you know, and other sectors too, they have these capex cycles. And you know, we have high prices, and everybody invests at the same time. Everyone's chasing labor, chasing staff, chasing equipment, and then the stuff either gets built or it gets wound down, and all of a sudden there's excess equipment, excess labor, and then you have this period of demand where things are in shortfall again. Then there's investment, and off we go again. Tugboats are actually no different, and we've had a sustained period with low energy prices and low oil prices for a long time, where no one's been building these tugboats, and no one's got them essentially. So, but now we're seeing the drilling activity pick up, oil and gas activity pick up, and Mermaid Marine have just gone from strength to strength and just, you know, essentially upgraded and beat earnings again recently, and the stock's gone from like $1 to $2 now essentially. And you know, I think we bought stock at $1.40 or something like that. And you know, I mean, it's cool because you can actually use history here to learn. So you go back to the last cycle or cycle before, it's been around a while, so you can actually do it, and go have a look at the peers around the world who do similar things, and you'll see that they can generate 30 and 40% margins pretty sustainably at the top of the cycle. Okay, so if we think the top of the cycle's still ahead of us somewhere, which is our thesis, and we know that they're going to earn 30 to 40% margins, we know roughly how much work they're going to have as well. So I roughly know what their earnings are going to be. And if I run that on a conservative multiple for the company, I can get like 330, 350 a share.
Yeah, right.
So I can see a multi-year kind of cyclical upswing for MRM, and that's why we own it, and that's why we like it.
Yeah, right. And I'm glad you kind of started with like the risk side of it, because it is a cyclical business, as you
super
mentioned.
Super cyclical.
Actually, two tugboats went past me while I was fishing the other day. Funny story. I've never seen one in my life, and they went past me. They are enormous if you haven't been beside one. And the wake that those things create, unbelievable.
I got a couple of mates, and they spend, you know, half their sort of time driving those things, getting paid a fortune, and then they go and drive the super yachts in like Monaco and stuff, and they don't get paid very much, but obviously have a peach of a time.
Yeah, have a great time. Yeah, yeah. They're bloody enormous, those things, and you don't really appreciate it till you're up close with one. And
no, they're big bit of kit, long lead time to be able to catch up to the to the demand cycle. And not saying that that's not, you know, going to happen, it will, but the incumbents and the people with stock and availability end up being able to charge higher and higher prices for a period of time because the lag's quite slow.
Okay, so that's MRM. Should I push you for another one, or should we just refer everyone just to get in contact with you? I'm easy.
Yeah, 45 minutes. I will happily do two more with anyone who books a meeting with me.
Okay, pretty
I'll
fair.
Just do them. I'll do them one by one, and we can do something in a sector that people are interested in or whatever. Because I'm sure they're sick of listening to me for 45 minutes.
No, it's good. So we've been through Cochlear, which is just expensive. It's just a wonderful business, just expensive.
Yeah, don't get upset if you own it. Like, great. Yeah. But, you know, like I think if you do own it, you know, I'm not buying it. And as I always tell people, there is no hold in investing. There's only buy or sell.
Okay. I'm a long-term holder type of guy.
No, but you're either rebuying at today's prices or you're selling.
So the intuition there is like you would be prepared to
repay for today. Because the alternative is essentially, because there's no friction in transacting.
Other than tax.
Yeah. But if you, I hate investing for tax. Like, yeah, you hard. Know, I would rather just buy the stuff I like. Sure, you've held it for 43 days, it's probably worth holding it for 45. Sure, you've held it for 362 days, it's probably worth holding it for 365. But, you know, and I'm not discounting the tax side of it from an advisor's perspective, but I think you've just got to be focused on, you know, your tax benefit could be gone in 2 days of bad trading, you know, and all of a sudden you're not happy. So,
Fair. So we talked about Cochlear.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about ResMed, which is stacking up quality-wise, and the valuation seems to be there.
Yeah. Not without risk, though, I think. It's important absolutely. To
Yeah,
to
you
point
mentioned
out.
Like the
That's why it's trading where it
GLP-1s, is. GLP-1s, all these types of things that it's important to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, MRM is the ticker symbol for Mermaid Marine.
Well, it's MMA Offshore. Is the name of the okay. business now. But yes, it's the old Mermaid Marine.
Okay, Mermaid Marine. If you do like Mermaid Marine, write into us, let us know. Or if you do work at Woodside, if you're an engineer, yeah, let us know in the comments on YouTube.
The sand gropers are going to whack me. I apologize, everyone Australian Illuminati.
Let him have it. And also, he's given us some beach and restaurant tips as well. So next time, I'll see how that goes in Sydney. I don't know if it sounds quite Hubert's. Yeah,
it's expensive. Like, sounds like get your checkbook out.
Yeah, okay. I don't have one.
I'll tell you. Indicative next time I'll go with you. We'll go next time we go to Sydney.
I'll put it on you though.
Put on a Seneca card.
Yeah, for sure.
JB's Amex.
All right, Luke. It's always a pleasure, mate. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies. Which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at Rask, which is the launch of our Rask Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high growth strategy focuses on longer term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside Rask Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called Rask Core. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 Rask community members have begun the Rask Plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect What would happen if? You want to protect your family if something goes wrong. You want to protect your spouse if you lose your job. You want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy. Insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that, but one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian property podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of RASCOR, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax. I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nevexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All RASC users get 20% off an annual plan with Nevexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nevexa's software, and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nevexa, but they do create some great tools which the RASC community uses each and every day. Number eight, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number nine, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the RASC YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the RASC network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the RASC Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we're on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. RASC Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the RASC Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000, and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support RASC and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the RASC network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.